The lazy is hiding his hand in a dish, too weak to bring back to his lips. By his own admission, he's wiser in wish than seven with sensible quips. Proverbs 26, verses 15 and 16, our daily scripture for today, little children, and it's from the Ward Green version of 2004. That was continuing our study of the article Trojan War from 2015. Chapter 12 is called Trees Represent Empirical Evidence, which is an acronym. T-R-E-E, it spells tree. And the theme scripture is, for this chapter, he will certainly become like a tree planted by streams of water that gives its own fruit in its season, and the foliage of which does not wither, and everything he does will succeed. That's Psalms chapter 1, verse 3 from the New World Translation of 1984. And the easy-to-read version of the Bible says, for that verse, so they grow strong like a tree planted by a stream, a tree that produces fruit when it should and has leaves that never fall. Everything they do is successful. So this talks about the righteous people and what they're like. A global deluge, such as that described in the biblical record on a scale sufficient to kill all living things on the surface of the earth, would kill plants as well. So it doesn't kill the sea animals necessarily, although it kills a good number of those too. And we know that because of the fish fossils that were found. We're obviously, you can't get a fossil if the fish is not buried under a large amount of sediment to squeeze out enough pressure to squeeze out the water, which is the way a fossil forms. But fish would have to be buried in large masses of sudden deposits of sediment, right, which comes from massive amounts of water, such as would have been present at the deluge. This would kill plants as well, it says. The deluge drowned the plants also, as well as killing all the animals. And of course, birds can't live for a whole year without any foliage of any plant. And the waters of the deluge were above the tops of all the mountains in the whole earth, according to the Bible. Yeah, I've been learning more about why we should really, we need to trust the Bible. And the way you can learn that is you listen to some creationist scientists who can explain, like such as, for example, the scientists on the YouTube channel, Creation Ministries International. Is it Creation or Creationist Ministries? Let me see if I can find out. Oops, let's see. Creation Ministries International, I think it was called. Yeah, Creation Ministries International. These scientists who know or believe the Bible can tell you what the secular scientists are saying and explain why the arguments by the secular scientists don't make sense. For example, one thing about the secular, the most important thing perhaps about the secular scientists, is everything they say is based on there being no God. There couldn't have been any creation because there was no God, and there is no God as far as the creation science, not the creation scientists, but the secular scientists are saying. What they're saying is there is no God, and there couldn't have been a creation. But they're not necessarily saying that explicitly. It's implicit in the science, because science is based on the idea of explaining things without God. It's just based on the idea of studying the natural phenomena and explaining them using equations and trying to understand what's happening. But yeah, but there's so many interesting things about this topic, but we don't have time to go into it all today. But for example, one important thing is the world that we live in, the universe we live in, was affected, according to the Bible, the world we live in was affected by man's sin, so that we're living in a fallen world where everything is functioning at a lower level of perfection than what it was at the time before the original sin. The sin affected everything. And that's not possible to be understood by without faith. I mean, it's not possible for that to be understood by somebody who's just looking at what we have now and studying what we have now. And if you can imagine it, that the world was more perfect and, well, without death, but more perfect in every way. Like, God cursed the ground after Adam sinned also, so the plants didn't grow as well. Everything was cursed and it functioned worse. Yeah, so hopefully we'll get back to talking about that sometime. But after the deluge killed, according to the Bible, all the plants, as well as all every living, breathing thing, and plants need air to breathe, thereafter the trees which grew independently of some subterranean root system would require time to regrow, but probably also even the trees that were connected to a subterranean root system, they may well have died too, because this deluge was absolutely categorically immense. It was phenomenal, because all around the world, according to one, and all his friends agreed with him, and they were all experts on flood forensics, you know, they study forensics of after a flood happens, they go and look at it and see what took place, you know, based on what's there now. And this very experienced expert on floods, or fluvial plains and things like that, floodplains, he would study and know that there couldn't have been, you know, millions of years, because the floodplains that were laid down in the layers that happened during, which we know or believe was from the Bible, the flood, Noah's flood, those layers don't have any dead animals in them, they don't have any holes from burrowing animals. They would have had burrowing animals and other signs of footprints and all sorts of things. All sorts of evidence that those layers had been disturbed, right? If they'd been there for millions of years or thousands of years, or if it took thousands of years to make these layers, there'd be a lot of disruption in the layers. And they're just perfect layers, except for the fossils, which were trapped evidently by the silt that came down quickly from the flood, and in massive quantities of sediments that came down. So, of the trees taking root immediately in the dry earth after the deluge, these would multiply, and each would die in time, while the oldest of these we possibly have on record today. They keep track. They keep a catalog of all, or if that's the right word, an archive, a catalog, a list of all the trees in the world that are the oldest. They keep a record of it. And that's what we're going to look at today. In addition to this graph, we might have time to look at here too. which is the Mississippi River Proxy Paleo Flood Histories. But they look at these trees. Now, we don't have time. Let's see. Yeah. It comes later in the chapter. We're going to look at the tree inventory. They keep an inventory of all the trees on Earth as far as which ones are the oldest. How many are there of the most ancient trees, like thousands of year old trees? There aren't any trees from before the deluge. There are none that old. And that's possible based on our date for the deluge. That works perfectly in the chronology of these trees. That can be seen just by taking an old tree and drilling a core, finding out how many rings. So they get an idea. But, I mean, even, of course, that's not entirely reliable. Not every tree has one ring. But, here's the graph of the trees. Not every tree has one ring every year, so it's not necessarily the right, most accurate way to do it, but radiocarbon isn't accurate either for things that old. As we've already talked about, because we have to correct it at the time and so on, at the time, according to Whitelaw's correction, but first we'd have to calibrate it, and then we'd have to correct it, as we did, right? And we know that 5700 before present is what we found to be 5 years before the deluge, or just about almost exactly our deluge date, within the accuracy of the radiocarbon, 5700 before present is the deluge date. We might as well say, because it's a nice round number too, so we might as well just call it 5700 for the purpose of discussion. So we got 5,700 before present, but in this graph, we don't need to know that because these dates are for the trees, not from radiocarbon, but they're from the tree rings, and it's giving the years, how many years old the tree is. So the 2,000-year-old trees are where the graph starts, and then it goes up to the 3,000-year-old trees, which is, at the time of the article, the year 986 BCE. And then the 4,000-year-old trees, which are from 1986 BCE. Then the 5,000-year-old trees, which are from 2,986 BCE. So how many trees are there that are 5,000 years old? Well, the curve was drawn afterwards. The individual points were plotted based on the known inventory of trees that's kept by the foresters or the people who are interested in the ancient trees. These people who keep track of the trees they keep count of how many trees there are on Earth of this age. There's about three trees, looks like, that are 5,000 years old. From this graph, it looks like three. I think so. And then from the 4,000-year-old trees, there are about six, seven, something like that. Six, it looks like. And then of the 3,000-year-old trees, these are younger, a lot younger than 5,000, but there are about 15 trees that are 3,000 years old on Earth at the time of the writing of this article, and there are about 35, or maybe they don't know every old tree, but they I guess can tell the older trees. They're not going to discover necessarily every tree that's old, but this gives us an idea roughly how many trees there are. 35 2,000-year-old trees is where the graph starts. And then when I drew a curve, and I fitted a curve to this, and I have another thing here too, if I make, what did I do with these points? Let's see. Yeah. It's interesting. But after I made the graph, I found a curve that fit best. And what on earth? Yeah, there were only four data points on this graph. Therefore, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, and 5,000-year-old trees. Those are the 4 points. And based on those 4 points, I fitted a curve of the nature. It was exponential. It had the nature y equals a exponent bx. Okay? Or a to the power bx. That's the form of it. So you can vary the number, which is represented by the letter A. You can vary that. And we got the best fit with A equals 196, and also it's A exponent BX, and we can vary B as well. And with B equals minus 0.0008613, we got the best fit that's shown here, and that curve is an exponential curve, and it's approaching, I think you can see a, well, it would approach 1, I think, because you can't have something to the power of something else equals 0. Something to the power of 0 equals 1. So it's hard to explain math when I've just taken that for granted for so many years. But A exponent BX cannot equal 0. It never will until it approaches 1. Curious, isn't it? But anyway, I'm sure that we can explain all that if we have time, but we could look it up and find out what the explanation is for that. All these things can be done, but just for interest here, this graph approaches at the time of the deluge, right? Which is 5296 years before present. Why is it 5296? It doesn't make sense. We said it was 5231. So that's 5296, because 5296 is bigger than 5231, right? So I can show you this. This is something that you would probably appreciate. 5296, some people would appreciate this, minus 5231, just to show that we're not in the year 1950 anymore. We're 65 years after. In 1950, if we add 65 on to 1950, we get 2015, which was the year of the article. So, let's go to the history tape. That's the one. Edit expression. There we go. So 5296 minus 5231, right? That's the difference between the deluge date or the years before present from 1950, rather, of the deluge date, and the years before the date when this graph was made, which is 5296, which was 65 years later, right, as we just saw. And when we add that to 1950 to find out what year the graph was made, you can see it was made in the year of the article, 2015. So that's the explanation for that. 5296 here, that's the deluge. 5296 before the year 2015, that's the deluge date, same as 5231 before the year 1950, which is what before present is by convention deemed to be or to mean. All the before presents are all measured prior to 1950. We're 65 years later here at 5296 in the year 2015. So we fitted the curve to these points. I'm not sure. So this, there was some uncertainty as to how many trees existed of each age. That's why there are error bars for each point. And it's interesting. I took different numbers as examples with different size error bars. But in all cases here, you can see the curve. In every case, it comes through and still comes to the same point of two trees at the beginning. After the deluge, there were two trees. Or at least, if we could find these trees, there would be two trees at this point in time, based on this graph. At the time of the deluge, there would have been two trees. Just after the deluge. So some sprouting of two trees, which would explain the fact that there was some vegetation, because there was an olive leaf that was brought by a bird to Noah. One of the birds that had been on the ark went and got an olive leaf and brought it to Noah, and that's how Noah knew that they could come out of the ark, because the waters had subsided. But at this point of the deluge, right after the deluge, in other words, or this is probably 1 year before the floodwaters had subsided enough for there to actually be growth. So it might be accurate to within a year, but if that's sufficient, that's what we have here, is two trees just after the deluge. And they could be very small trees at that time, right? But they were still existing at that time. Now, that wouldn't have to be true. It wouldn't have to be two trees. But that's what this graph gave us. Right? So that's a remarkable result, isn't it? There could have been two trees that were that old. They might not have survived until today. But we do have three trees today, it looks like from the graph, that are actually 5,000 years old. So it really confirms the deluge, this empirical evidence of the tree ages. Isn't that astounding, that evidence? Just absolutely earth-shatteringly astounding. Here's a flood graph, which I need a label for to find out what it's about. The Mississippi River Proxy Paleo Flood, or Paleo Flood, Histories. This is from Large Rivers, edited by Avijit Gupta, 2007. Geomorphology and Management. Page 157, in this graph, look at the year 5700, which is our 5700 before present, in the uncalibrated number, right? We were talking about right there, the 5231 was calibrated, but it was 5700 for the deluge that was uncalibrated. So if we look here around 5700, even around 5500, you see that? The spring snowmelt floods on the southwestern Wisconsin Mississippi River tributaries. It's in a state of rapid change right at the time of the deluge. The snowmelt floods, they decrease. So supposedly there is no snowmelt, according to this. A lot less snowmelt flooding just after the deluge, which is probably what you would expect if it's hard to say what that means. Snow melt floods implies that there had been a lot of snow, or that there was a warm enough temperature for the snow to melt quickly. One or the other, so it's hard to say exactly what it means. But the fact that it's in rapid change at the time of the deluge seems to say that's pretty indicative of something. And then you look at the graph above that, which is the top one, the ratio of flood depth to bank full depth. Large overbank floods on the southwestern Wisconsin Mississippi River tributaries, And right at the year 5700, you see, it was up higher. The ratio was up around 4. And by the time of the deluge, it's dropping, right? It drops at the time of the deluge. 5700 before present, it's right about exactly, if this were a line that we extended through these points, it would have just about reached the same point as it was in 1950. Just at the time of the deluge, it would reach that same point. Large overbank floods. But this is just after the deluge, of course. After all the water's drained off the earth. And of course, in these immense plateaus that are seen all around the world, everywhere, 40% of the continents, according to this one particular creation ministry scientist who used to be an atheist, or rather an agnostic, Mr. Neller is his name, I think. See if we can find that. See if I can click on this and get there. There he is. Yeah. Yeah, that's him there. So.
All right. If your side's slip.
No. That's not. It's just an ad, which I don't allow. You know, I don't allow them to enter my thinking or my mind if I can possibly prevent it. Okay, so here is this expert on floods, and he was talking about this. He's got multiple videos on the CMI channel, Creation Ministries International. Ron Neller is his name, and he saw these patterns all around the world. He says that 40% of all continents, except for more like 60% in Africa, of continents are composed of these immensely high plateaus that were evidently laid down all at once, because they've got huge rift valleys between the plateaus, so big that you could never have a river big enough to have cut these valleys. Just immense valleys in between these plateaus. The only way to explain the valleys is if the layers were relatively soft at the time it was laid down, and if there was a flood draining off that would have gouged out these immense basins, cavities, you know, valleys in the earth. And that explains the fossils also. The flood explains everything. But the fact that there are these immense plateaus around the world, that's what is the main evidence. And you see also strange rock types that are found in the middle of some other rocks. And that's often been explained by the secular scientists as having been rocks that were moved by the glaciers during the ice ages. And for them, there's more than one ice age. For the creation account of the Bible, there's only one ice age that happened after the deluge. That was the time of the ice age. It was after the deluge. Only one, though, is needed. Only one ice age is needed to explain everything. According to the people who study this, who are actually not secular scientists, they're creation scientists. But every creation scientist has been exposed to the secular teachings and has, you know, studied that endlessly to see whether they could make sense out of the secular science, but including myself, because I was a secular scientist. And I only now can say I was a secular scientist, because it seems to me that I'm making changes right now in my belief about how old the earth is and things like that that I didn't expect to make. So there should be no trees older than the time of the deluge, and there isn't. Right? That would only, if there was a deluge, would that be true. So each tree that took root would die in time, and the oldest of these are kept on a a list in, there's a record kept of all these old trees. And the Earthly Tree Register of Ancient Trees has a role to play in proving the actual date of the deluge, as we showed already on the graph. A tree begins with the destructive act of a seed burst. Rings in a tree record its age and echoes a big bang. Now, the big bang, according to creationists, I've been learning, is not even really part of the creationist belief. They don't need that because they have the ability for God to create anything at any time. In chapter 1, we saw how time is viewed relative to an observer's frame of reference, so that at the energies required for protons and neutrons to form until now, only 5.5 days have passed in our time. The time having been dilated to manage our background radiation today. Well, that was just a short form way of saying that we've got background radiation today that shows how old the space is where the Earth is situated, because it must be very old for the background radiation to be as low as it is. It's very low, and it's been dissipated for a long time. So it might in fact be, as Chapter 1 explained, very old, but not from the point of view of the Big Bang. So what was one more thing before we go here. We didn't look at this bottom graph here from the fluvial or paleo flood histories, I should say. This is, yeah, it's to do with floods or fluvial things, which are flood things. 5700 for the graph that records percent sand in alluvium. In Lansing, Iowa. And you see in 5700 BCE that it's pretty well at some kind of equilibrium, maybe, but it's dropping a little bit at that time, and then it goes back up a little bit, and then it starts to drop. And the trend is dropping. In the percentages, from about, it drops from about 75% down to about, well, even below 50%, the percent of sand. So it was higher before. And then at the time of the deluge, it basically, it's maintained for a while, but then it drops to about 50% or lower for the percent of sand on the main channel of the upper Mississippi River in Lansing, Iowa. This is 5,700 years before present, where this change sort of begins, you might think, or you could argue. But that's very approximate. That's all for today. August 20th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1952 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I thank you for listening and watching. I love you very much, and in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now. That was chapter 12, paragraph 1.